new CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount+. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Good afternoon. Welcome into the Illini Inquirer podcast. It's Jeremy Warner here with Michael Tulip. We didn't want to let the week go by and not have Michael Tulip on to talk about that Michigan State loss. Because I'll be honest with you, Mike, I'm not expecting much to talk about after the Michigan game. So it feels fresher to talk about this Michigan State loss that had some concerning signs of it. I think Illinois is still a very good basketball team, and they're number 14 still in the country in the AP poll. They keep going back and forth between 10 and 14. And to be honest with you, that's about where I think they should be. But how are you, Mike? Good afternoon. And thanks for joining us live on the YouTube channel here, man.
I'm doing well. The sun is shining over here in Indy. So, you know, it's a great way to end the day.
Yeah. So, Mike, what the hell happened at the end of the Michigan State game? You got an 8-point lead with under 7 minutes left. And I thought they were playing well. I thought the offense was humming. And I was thinking this could be the best win of the year for Illinois to win at that Breslin Center that was amped up. I think a Michigan State team that is a good team, that's played like a really good team for the last 2 months. So how did it all fall apart?
Yeah, well, you hit on a good point, because I think going into that game, I think I talked on pregame radio, but I said that this is your toughest test of the year. And have you played better teams? Sure, but I thought that with the environment you were going into, that's a desperate MSU team that needed that win to feel like they were at least on the right side of the bubble at this point, was still some time to play out here. But, you know, you like, how mentally tough can you be in this game? You've had a long layoff. You come in, there's not a ranking next to Michigan State's logo. Like what type of team do you want to be? And I thought for 35 minutes, 34 minutes, it was a hell of an effort, really. But the collapse, you can factor in a lot of things. Obviously not getting stops, turning the ball over, some shot selection, and we can go in any direction here, but all those things contributed. And coming off the Nebraska game, you kind of think that would rectify. Now, those were different in certain ways, in my opinion, but that was disappointing, because I think if Michigan State won that game wire to wire, you'd maybe feel like, Michigan State's day, knew it was going to be a tough game. But the fact that you had it and then the game ended that way was disappointing.
Brad Underwood just had a press conference. He called this team soft. What do you make of that?
I mean, that's a strong word, but look, I think part of this is not just the fact that they played soft in the last 5 minutes of that game. That's their defense is, I don't want to say it's a soft defense, because that would be the wrong way to frame it. But when you play drop coverage, you know, when you have a Coleman Hawkins, it's in a rover spot as opposed to being where I think he's most successful, even against a non-factor five, you know, up and drop coverage, being able to be active, get his hands on balls. When you play more of like a soft coverage, I feel like guys can kind of fall into that. Whereas if you're blitzing ball screens and if you're trapping in the post and if you're, there's just a natural physicality that comes along with that. But that's on everyone involved to just say, you know, either, you know, you're tough because you're tough. Like, you're not tough because of the coverage. You're not tough because of the matchup that you have. You're tough because that's who you are when you step on the floor. Because if it's like a, oh man, I got to be tough this game, that means there's a switch. And switches are bad because, you know, sometimes you can try to turn them on. Sometimes they don't come on. Like, it's got to be every single time. Like, you look at guys like Andres Feliz and Trent Frazier, and maybe that's a size thing.
Yeah.
Right? Where there's a survival element to it. Because I do see, I mean, there's certain guys that come in there that play with that type of desperation defensively. And you just have to fight human nature if you're this team, because you are talented. Offensively, you're talented.
Scored 80 points.
Right. So what does that do for you defensively when you're like, you know what? It's not as dire because we can go take care of it on the other end. Because when this offense is taken off, the defense has kind of gone the opposite way.
Who are those guys that you can rely on for that toughness, physicality, grit, all that right now?
I mean, I think each guy possesses it in different ways. I think the guys that come to mind are like a Ty Rogers, I think of toughness when I think of Luke Goody.
Yeah.
I think of toughness when I think of a Coleman Hawkins and a Terrence Shannon. And like, Damask isn't like a, you know, hit you, bulldoze you type of guy defensively, but Damask has toughness. Like, they all have toughness. It's just finding ways to continue to bring that on every single defensive possession. Because the other thing that I'll say is they have had so many different defensive coverages. And that, like, I think there's a law of diminishing returns there at times as well, where it's like, hey, we're in drop, or we're switch 1 through 5, or we're switch 1 through 4, or now we're going to show this kind of zone that goes back to man. And there's just, so especially in a road environment, when you have all those different coverages and all those different defenses, if you're not going to communicate, that's one thing. But if you're not going to play with the requisite amount of toughness, now you can't even really cover up mistakes, because that's what toughness is. Like, toughness and playing hard and all those things, it's not perfect, but you give yourself a chance in those moments. And I thought they were tough for a good, you know, part of that game. It's just the down the stretch, they, you know, just kind of wilted.
This is a defense that I thought could be elite this year. And early in the season, maybe it's the opponents that are playing Mike. But even against a team like Marquette, I thought this defense looked really good for most of that game. Why has it slipped to where over the last 5 games, it's allowing 81 points a game? Like, I just didn't see this coming. I thought this defense had such a high floor.
It's partly what I mentioned with, yeah, I think just a lot. There's a lot that they're doing defensively. And, you know, good teams are versatile on that end. There's no question. But earlier in the year, it felt like there was just a little more continuity with what they were doing more consistently, where it's like, hey, we're drop. We're going to stay in drop. And you can continue to get really, really good at that. And all this stuff factors in, because in drop, like, you got to, Coleman Hawkins has to be really good. Dane Danger has to be really good, because they're the ones backpedaling into the paint. But as the season wears on, as you lose your legs a little bit, like, are you still getting through screens the same way? Because that's another thing that will just completely disrupt your defense and strain guys in different ways. So I think that has been a factor. I think the way they've played offensively has been a factor. They've played with more pace since the beginning of the season. So all that factors in too. But the only way for me, at least in my mind, to mitigate that is to just play your butt off. Like, play your butt off. And if it's playing your butt off for 3.5 minutes, cool. We got depth. Get somebody else in. Get you back out there. Like, that group that they had out there, Goody, Damask, Hawkins, Shannon, Harmon, I think it was a little bit under the 14-minute mark, all the way down to like the 6-minute mark that group was in with each other without any substitutions. And they built that lead. So, but you have to be able to dial in and lock in. You get the February and March, man. It's like, I can talk about coverages all day. I can talk about this and getting over, but it's just, it's effort.
Still, that said, does Underwood need to simplify things defensively? Do, like, what should he do? Is there like one or two coverages that they should run on more often?
Well, I think you gotta ask yourself if two things are happening, because you've always heard me say this when it comes to film, when it comes to adjustments, all those things. If you're not giving 100% effort, and I don't want this to sound like this team doesn't play hard, because this team plays hard. Mm-hmm. It's just making it more consistent and playing smart too. I think you can factor that in as well, staying focused. Like, are you doing those things and are you communicating first? Because I think you can run all these different coverages and, hey, we're switching 1-5 now and switching 1-4 if you're communicating and if you're playing hard all the time. But if you feel like that's an issue, then now you can't properly judge whether or not you should make an adjustment, unless it's just like, hey, we just need those other two things to happen, communicating and playing hard.
Yep.
But I do think there's probably a simplification element to it. They did it offensively.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they had success with it. So yeah, maybe there is a opportunity to say, hey, in this home stretch, here's kind of like, you know, the main coverages we want to play, but a lot of that's personnel dependent too. So yeah. I think figuring out those rotations, which is not a perfect science. And I think it's something that with a new team, which this kind of is, outside of Terrence Shannon, Coleman Hawkins and Ty Rogers, and maybe Luke Goody, like, you're finding out what works late game, and you want to figure that out here in February so you have an idea going into March.
One thing that has not worked late game is having Ty Rogers off the court. Northwestern, Ty Rogers wasn't on the court. Michigan State, Ty Rogers not on the court. I can understand he's not a shooter. He can condense the floor a little bit. I did not understand why he was not on the court at Michigan State, when I just thought Luke Goody was put in a bad situation. Quincy Guerrier, we'll get into him, has just not been the same player the last couple weeks. What did you make of that? Why does Ty need to be on the court in some of these moments? Just because I think offensively he can create a little bit. He can get the Nebraska. We don't talk about how clutch he was. A lot of people like, but he didn't score maybe, but he was getting those offensive rebounds you talked about that meant to prolong the game to get them to overtime. I just think he's one of their five best players, and I kind of believe in Ty Rogers. I kind of want him on the court, Mike. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think watching the game, it was confusing for me, but it's interesting when you're sitting there on the couch, and I know you were there,
yeah,
but you're watching it and – you know, it's hard to kind of take it all in. And then I think when I went back and watched it the second time, you know, Ty comes in at the 6.5 minute mark and he's in for about 2 minutes and he has a foul immediately. Like he locks and tries to trail Tyson Walker. Walker baits him, foul, shoots two free throws. And then they got two stops in a row after that. And then Coleman probably got fouled on a layup and was on the ground. They got out in transition, hit a three. And then that was really it. Then he kind of got out of there. Here's like kind of the – here are my overall thoughts on this.
Yeah.
There's no question that there's less spacing when Ty's on the floor offensively. There's no question. Like when you have Goody and you have Harmon out there, there is much more spacing. There's room to operate. No doubt about that. When Ty was in there, they had Sissoko on him, and they just planted him right in the middle of the paint. Coleman actually still got a decent look around the rim. He didn't finish it because he may have gotten fouled. But when you talk about being up eight, and you go back to the Nebraska game, he was in when they were up 10.
Yeah.
And it went into overtime. I just think that, like, more times than not, assessing the game, and this is my opinion, right? Again, sitting on the couch, not being in the locker rooms, not being there at practice, is just, hey, if they were down five with 6 minutes to go, I'm not sure Ty Rogers is the guy that you have in there, because, like, you need spacing and stops don't really matter as much because you do need to score to try to catch up.
Right.
Now, when you're up eight with, you know, 5 minutes left, 5.5 minutes left, 6 minutes left, whatever it is, you know, can you get in there and, like, stops win you the game when you're up eight? You know, like, and they've shown that with him on the floor, even when he's guarded by fives, that they can still be a good offense, not because, you know, there's more spacing, because there isn't, but he generates second chance opportunities. And to me, looking back on it, I think it was less about getting Ty in there when it was 72-64 and more about getting Ty in there after Goody gave up the and one to Hall with like 2 minutes and 46 or 40 seconds left.
Right.
To me, it was Rodgers instead of Guerrier. Like that is looking back on it. So it wasn't like the full 6 minutes. It was that right there where I just thought when Quincy went in, you could tell, I mean, his footing, like he was off balance. Like he didn't seem ready to play when he got in there. And I just, when you have a certain personnel in there, it's not about, you know, hey, now Malik Hall is going to go. It's they run different stuff. When they went back to Malik Hall because Luke Goody was on.
Mm-hmm.
But when Ty was in there, they were going middle ball screen in the middle of the floor with Tyson Walker for floaters where Coleman could get in drop. So it changes with your personnel. And I don't know. I just want to see moving forward how they manage this. Cause I think like the move would probably have been to go Rodgers for Goody, especially in those last 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Cause when you break it down, I think Rodgers is the better defender. I think Rodgers is the better rebounder, both offensively and defensively. And that's saying something. Cause Luke
Goody was pretty good actually on like he was hitting the team and rebounds. Ty only had two and Ty hasn't been as good defensively as I want him to be. And I think he can be, especially with the communication stuff. But in that moment, it just felt like I need a Ty Rodgers moment here.
Yeah. And just even offensively, you mentioned the Nebraska game where it's not perfect and the spacing isn't great, but what he can do generating second chance opportunity to kind of prolong the opportunities you have on the offensive end, I think is huge. I think he's a great cutter. He's a great slasher. But we say all this, you can't turn the ball over like they did. Cause Ty Rodgers could have sat that last 6 minutes and they could have won that game.
Right. Yeah. Let's dive into that then. Because I mean, offense, I'm not concerned a lot about the offense here, Mike, but there are two games in a row here where late in the game, the offense is struggling. They missed six shots and two turnovers in the final 4 minutes against Nebraska. They missed nine straight shots, go 7 minutes without a field goal and have three back-to-back turnovers, it felt like, or within four possessions that all led to runouts for Michigan State, which certainly hurts your defense. What are you seeing there? I mean, these are simple entry passes that they weren't able to make against Michigan State.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the entry passes, and this is just something that, you know, when you go to the same action for the majority of the second half, which was getting Coleman in that long post, and, you know, Harmon tried to get it to Damask that one time when they intercepted it. Smart players like A.J. Hogard, like, you know, like a Tyson Walker, like those type of guys that are on the ball, Jay Nakins, when you give them a steady diet of where that action is starting from, right? Whether it's, hey, you know, we're going to get it onto the left, you know, to 19 feet with Coleman, he's going to back down to 19 feet with Damask, he's going to back down. I just, even if that's the action you're getting to, in a game like that where things get tight, officiating gets tight, and like they're not going to call as much, like you can't dribble up the left side of the court the whole time, pick up the ball, enter it. Mm-hmm. Like there's got to be like a false action to get back over to that side. Because one, you move the defense at least once. You don't let them kind of park and set up like they did. And granted, like this is – Illinois has had success doing this too. But maybe it's, hey, I'm Justin Harmon. We want to enter it to Marcus Damask. We got Terrence Shannon here on the right wing. You know, Goody's space. Let me go dribble handoff weave, right? Or dribble handoff with Terrence Shannon, come with his left hand. And like that at least gets the attention of the defense to where now we can enter it to Damask. Or maybe if they blow a switch, like we just got Terrence playing up top and can get downhill. Cause I think like they've really tried to slow things down and go to that booty ball and more NBA style, but having other ways to get into that, especially late game, when teams are going to load up, when teams know that's what you're going into, I think that'll alleviate some of that and not have you have to play in such close quarters.
Are you seeing anything with shot selection at the end of games? Like Terrence has had moments in these last few games where he's looked like all Big Ten first team Terrence Shannon. He certainly looked like that for most of the game against Michigan State. Missed six straight shots in the game. Nebraska missed a bunch of shots towards the end of the game. Are you seeing anything with shot selection or the shots they are getting at end of games, or are they just not making them?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, I think they did get some good shots. Like even when I think it was 72-64 and they got a stop and then came down. This is when Goody was in the game and Hawkins had a great skip pass.
Yep.
Goody with no one in the zip code. Yep. So like they got good looks. The ones that I have some pause with, and it's tough to say you have pause because we've seen them do it, but the ones where there's no kind of inside out look and it's just east west and it's a Terrence Shannon right wing catch and shoot three, because I think when it was 74-72 or maybe 72-72, whatever it was, Terrence had the same type of look but just drove with his right hand, attacked Malik Hall on a switch and got downhill and got fouled and shot free throws. So I get that in that position it's like knockout punch, because the reality is if he does hit one of those threes they might win the game,
right?
So that's kind of the part that you're like, do we live with that? Do we not live with that? It's just on these players to say, okay, we're up eight. What are the two most important things? It's getting stops and it's taking care of the ball. I should say three. Getting stops, taking care of the ball, shot selection. Like if you take care of two of those things, you might win the game, right? If you're not really getting stops, but your shot selection's good and you're taking care of the ball, you have a chance. If you're turning it over a little bit, but when you do get shots on rim, they're good shots and you're getting stops, you give yourself a chance to win. And so you see what I'm getting at. It's just, it can't be a breakdown of all three, which it kind of was at certain times in that game. Because the best offense for Illinois is getting a shot up.
Right.
Like that's how just like their offensive rebounding, that's what won them the game, or I guess didn't lose them the game in regulation against Nebraska, was just like, you know, they had the one turnover for Terrence with Juwan Gary, but other than that, they were getting shots on the rim and having 40-second offensive possessions. Ty Ryder's getting it, tapping it back out, extending those possessions. So, you know, that is those three key areas late game, and they got to find a way to rectify that.
Mike, when we come back, I want to talk about two of the slumping seniors here on this team. Also talk about a little bit of positives from Michigan State, I thought, especially offensively, and look ahead to the two games this week. We'll do that after we hear from one of our great sponsors. This episode of the Illini Inquirer podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. A common misconception about relationships is they have to be easy to be right. But sometimes the best ones happen when both people put in the work to make them great. Therapy can be a place to work through those challenges you face in all your relationships, whether with your significant other, friends, work, or anyone. Guys, I know you can go through life and everything's going well, but there are things you still need to be talking through, especially in your relationships. I know my wife and I talk through a lot of these things, but sometimes it really helps to talk with someone else. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. So become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/Illini today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Illini.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
All right, Mike. Terrence Shannon, 28 points, his most productive game since coming back. I just thought he was so aggressive, getting to the rim. Started the game 7 of 13 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, and 12 of 13 from the free throw line. You needed that type of performance to have a chance in East Lansing. And I just thought Coleman Hawkins in that booty ball was so good, dicing up Michigan State. Just I think he assisted on 5 of the 11 made threes for Illinois in that game. That's what you need from your stars. Like, they need a little bit more help, but those guys I thought were really encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, really encouraging to see Terrence get back to the free throw line at the rate he was getting there before the suspension. And then I thought his activity on the offensive glass was tremendous.
Yeah, great point.
He is such a weapon on the offensive glass and can really, really continue to help them in that area when he pursues it. And Coleman was a stud. I mean, you saw early in that half, you know, the really a set play out of the gates. It looked like to get Quincy going, they pinned in on the backside, had Coleman skip it, hits a three, and he just was making all the right reads out of it. He's so smart. I think he's, you know, he can be somewhat, you know, underrated when he gets to backdowns against smaller guys. And so for him to be able to put his imprint on the game in that way, when it's usually a Damask or it's usually some of these other guys that are doing some of these backdowns, I thought was great, because you know, his vision is tremendous. And look, these two guys are just, if Illinois wants to accomplish what they want to accomplish, I mean, these two guys, man, have to continue to be lights out. Now, Terrence late, you know, you know, some of those shots he took late were just kind of, you know, the layup at the end, that's, you know, Terrence Shannon makes that right. 99 times out of 100. But yeah, I mean, just him continuing to try to be, you know, be smart with shot selection late. But they were a huge reason why they were up 72-64 with time winding down. So if they tighten the screws a little bit late game, I mean, this is, again, this team, they have, it's all there. Like to me, it's all there. It's just about, you know, getting a complete 40-minute effort.
Yeah, I thought you made a great point. Some of those toughness rebounds, putbacks, I thought were just massive. And the little things that Terrence Shannon was doing before that suspension, that those are the great things, I think, to see. One thing that's concerning me now is, you know, I didn't want to react too much, but Quincy Guerrier had such an 11-game tear where he averaged about 16 points, 9 rebounds from December through January, shot 43% from three. But last four games, 5.5 points, 4.5 rebounds. And I'm just not seeing the same bite. Like, I'm not seeing the same physicality from him on either side of the floor. What does Illinois need to do to get him right? Because he's such an X factor.
No, he is. Yeah, he is. I mean, a lot of times, I mean, think about when Jacob Granison was really good.
Yeah.
Like when Jacob Granison was really good for those teams, they didn't lose very often. Because it's like an added scoring punch. It's, you know, he makes toughness plays, and that's what Quincy has to kind of dial back in. And again, I'm not there at practice, locker room. I know he just had a kid.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot there in addition to being a college athlete that that you have to probably kind of compartmentalize. But for him, it just, like, it starts with his effort. It just does. He's cross-matched on Tominaga against Nebraska and doesn't have any offensive rebounds. Now, Tominaga did a heck of a job of blocking out like shorter guys do when they're trying to survive a cross-match like that. But I just mentioned Coleman Hawkins and Terrence Shannon, just what they can do for this team, and when you forecast what this team can do moving forward, Quincy's a big part of that too. Marcus Damask is a big part of that too. Like, they're going to need all these guys at a bare minimum. Like, because I watch Quincy, and there's guys that when you question effort or you question, you're like, man, do they care? Like, I think Quincy cares, and it's almost like it's less of an effort thing and more of a focus thing. Because when you're focused, you can get yourself to the right place. You can be in the right place, you know, positionally, and you can do all those things, and you put yourself in the right spot. So that's the next step for him. Now, as they've changed some things and gone to more booty ball and back downs, like Quincy really started to, I guess, sprout when, like, I think about the Mizzou game, like the FDU game, the Colgate, like those where guys are getting downhill. Maybe there's help off the strong side corner, drive and kick. There's a little more kind of standing mm-hmm. and finding your spot. Cause I feel like Quincy, where he was making a killing, was from those corners.
Yeah.
And now it's like he's kind of shifting around and they're cutting through and where am I going to get the looks? And, but all that to say, if he plays with just the intentionality and the focus that he's fully capable of doing, because we've seen it, this team will for sure hit another gear.
I thought among all the players, the playing time would most be impacted of Terrence Shannon's return. I thought Justin Harmon would get fewer minutes. He's actually averaging the same. 25 minutes when Terrence was out in about seven games, 25 minutes in the five games coming back, but his point total is kind of halved there. What do you see there? Because again, like this guy playing a lot of minutes, not getting a ton of production out of him, but we know, again, he's another huge X factor to help those, you know, three main stars we talk about.
Yeah. I think Justin's been really good. I think when you look at I don't put the most stock into plus minus, but for this guy, it's just game after game. It's kind of hard to deny, especially in Big Ten play. He's been really solid in with the minutes that he's had. And that's not just, you know, point production or defensively. I mean, I think he's done good things in both of those areas, but it's an alignment thing too. When you talk about him offensively and you can say, hey, all right, we got a 38%, 40% 3-point shooter. We can space and what that allows us to do. So it's not like he's going in there and is willing himself to a personal 14-0 run like he did against FDU. It's just more so him being out there allows them to do certain things offensively. And I do think he's super active in gaps and he does compete on the ball defensively. And he draws tough assignments at times, especially when he comes in and he's subbing in for a Terrence Shannon or subbing in for a Ty Rogers who's guarding an AJ Hogard, who's guarding a Tyson Walker. So you see the recurring theme. Like when all these guys put it together, this is just a tough team to beat. And Justin, it's 67-64, and he's another guy that can attack switches and get downhill. We saw that in the Rutgers game where he just made them pay and was getting to the rim at will. And you know, 67-64, Carson Cooper gets switched on to him, and it's just he cooks. Like he just gets downhill, lays it in, and it's been great to see because that's what he did at Utah Valley State. And I think when you see a guy kind of recapture that scoring ability, that the confidence kind of permeates throughout the rest of your game. But I think where he is kind of an X factor for this team is on the glass, and he has to continue to be, because I think he's a really underrated rebounder. And whether that's offensively, certainly defensively, he's a guy that is going to be huge for them moving forward.
Illinois hosts Michigan, the last place team in the Big Ten, a team that will be without Doug McDaniel, their best player, and their offense has been putrid on the road without him, averaging about 61 points, shooting about 38% when he doesn't play in these road games. What do you want to see from him on Tuesday night against the last place team in the Big Ten at home?
It's toughness, right? Like, once again, what does this win do for your resume? Not much if you do win. What does it do for your net ranking? Not much if you do win. So, you know, can you go out and give an all-out 40-minute effort when the incentive is really just adding another win in the win column for the Big Ten race, for the NCAA tournament? Like that has to be the thought process. Because if this Illinois team comes in and says, man, let's recapture who we were defensively. Man, let's work to get good shots. Let's play with an all-out effort. They'll run this team off the floor.
Right.
But if you don't do those things and you let a team like that just knocked off Wisconsin a couple days ago or a week ago, anything can happen. I mean, I truly think all these Big Ten teams, albeit the top, I don't think is as great. I think you have Purdue, you have Illinois, Michigan State's surging, you know, you got Wisconsin, like, but the middle to bottom is still just, I just still think they're really dangerous. Like, they're dangerous enough to where you think if you want to come in and take a night off at the State Farm Center, they can beat you.
Indiana,
right?
Yeah.
Indiana, same thing. I didn't even have Khalil Ware. It didn't matter. Now, I know, like, Doug McDaniel's a massive loss for them, but I don't know. I mean, there could be a 25-point game from Kamwa. There could be, you know, Barnett could get going. Like, there's a lot of things that could happen. You don't want to leave it up to chance. Go in there and just, you know, plant your flag, you know, at midcourt of the State Farm Center. And if you play with that effort and toughness, this is, you know, that's a win.
Yeah. And it's a team that I feel like, man, if you deal them a couple blows early, Mike, we've seen with this Michigan team on the road, especially, like, they might not be able to get up. Like, they might not get off the mat. Like, I've seen that with that. At Maryland, not currently a quad one opportunity. There's a team that has your number. What do you want to see in that one? Because that's obviously a more talented team and a team probably not in the NCAA tournament conversation here. But, you know, that I'm going to be there on Saturday night. I'm interested to see the crowd because that fan base can be fickle with whether they show up or not. So it's still an opportunity to get a road win, but a team that's had your number.
Yeah, and you're right. When we played Maryland my senior year, they were contending for a Big Ten title. Dude, that right behind the basket, those bleachers go yes. to the moon. And they filled it with students. They run that flag down the student section. And just it's one of the best environments in I think in college basketball when it's right. But when we've seen teams go in there this year, you know, Michigan State went in there and won. Rutgers went in there and won. And, you know, it's not what it was, but this is a team that's had your number. Mm-hmm. And this is a team that punked you on your home floor and you turned in your worst performance of the season. So that's got to give you some added motivation going into that game. And all about how you guard Jameer Young. It's all about how you navigate ball screens. It's all about how you guard off ball screens when he's coming off of curl cuts, all that. That is, to me, that's the game. That is the game, is how you contain him and how, you know, I'll go back to a point that I wanted to make earlier when you talk about Coleman Hawkins. And I think I might've said it, but you know, when you have a non-shooting big and I don't want to say non-factor big, because Reese is certainly a factor. That's more reserved for like the Carson Coopers.
Right.
Of the world where like you're just planted in the paint. I just think that like when Coleman's in that rover spot, it's a great spot because he can see things. He's so smart, knows where actions are coming from, point, talk, air traffic control. But I think you take a little bit of the bite out of your defense when he's not up and he's not disrupting like he was on that stretch where he had 11 steals in two games and he like where he can kind of be in drop and make you second guess. And so my hope is that in that game, which I don't think they will, is like, you know, kind of planting Coleman further back because Reese is a non-shooter. Like, I just think play it almost straight up where you're up to touch and can kind of give some space on that drop to make Jameer Young have to make a decision.
Yep.
And also with Coleman Hawkins, stay on the floor.
Yep.
That's, you know, that hurts you against Maryland the first time around. He's off the floor for the end of the game. He's off the floor at the 8-minute mark in the first half. But I think he did come in at the end of that half, end of the first half with two fouls. But he is so important to this team.
But those fouls impacted him the way he defended, right? Like yeah. you could tell, like you just try not to get a foul and he's their rim protector. So it's just, let's not thought it was a soft tee. And I know he didn't like it, but I do think because of his emotions of how he acts and the histrionics he has, the refs aren't taking it right now from him. I mean, two T's in three games, not a lot of players get that for that. So I think they're quick on him, and I think he's got to be aware of that now, Mike.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing, too, is that's why that tech at Michigan State, which
– soft. I mean,
yeah, I mean, granted, they did get Illinois back.
They made up for it, yes.
With the Aikens one, but yelling at the team – here's what I don't understand. And I'm not going to go off on a separate tangent. I'm just going to make the point of like, I can't imagine that officials are oblivious to where a guy turning to this fans and saying boom, or, you know, Jane Akins turning towards the bench is the same as dudes like going down the floor and like shooting bullets into the stands and doing the too small all the way on the floor, rocking the baby. Like, to me, that is, I none of it should get teed up, to be honest.
Yeah. Right.
But the fact that that stuff goes like completely undeterred, and then you have this stuff, like, it's just, but my point is that if you're Coleman, it's finding that fine line of don't ever lose your fire, man.
Yes.
Like, don't ever lose that. Like, Coleman, if the day Coleman Hawkins comes into a game and is quiet and tames his own emotion, is a game that you're going to probably not see a good one. Like, it's not going to be a good game from Coleman Hawkins, because that's not the way he's wired. But still having the wherewithal to say, hey, my responsibility to this team is, as much as I want to turn and say something to these fans right in front of the official, because I think that factored in too. Like, he turned and he was like face to face with the official. Now you have a foul, and now your second foul is two. So don't give them a free one.
Yep.
And the last part I'll mention too is they are going to throw it into Julian Reese, and they are going to have Coleman Hawkins in single coverage. Most likely. Maybe they send a trap. This is a poor Maryland shooting team, so maybe it's not the worst thing.
Agreed.
But, like, he's got to be smart down there, not picking up two fouls, but gap help has to be there. Stunts have to be there. Digs have to be there. Fake digs, fake stunts, anything to get Julian Reese off kilter and not allow him to just get to back down dribble, back down dribble, back down dribble, left hook.
Yeah.
That can't. He has to be off rhythm in some form or fashion. Part of that's on Coleman Hawkins, and part of that is on the guys around him.
All right, Mike, before I let you go, I had a few questions I want to get to from the live chat here on YouTube. Boot says, team might be soft, but Brad needs to coach better. His lack of adjustments are glaring at times. Did you find a lack of adjustments in that Michigan State game?
Yeah, I talked about probably getting Ty in there with when, you know, for Quincy, or instead of Quincy, when you did take Luke Goody out. I think part of, you know, Brad Underwood's DNA, it's what makes him a really good coach, is that there is, just like with a lot of coaches, there's like some stubbornness, right? And it's hard when I think you watch a lineup that builds you this lead to 8 in that Michigan State game, you ride them from 13-minute mark to the 6-minute mark, and then you're quick to go back to them because that's who built the lead. Like, maybe there's an assessing element to it where it's like, okay, well, what do we need here? We're up 8. Let's prioritize stops. Okay, if we want to get stops, like, who are our guys that we can go to? And that's where maybe you bring in a Ty Rogers for a Luke Goody in those moments. Like, that's where I think some of the adjustments that can be made.
Well, and sure. To get to your point, like with Julian Reese, kind of going off on you at some point. I get the idea of what you're going for, force them into tough twos, but he was kind of rolling. So at some point, yeah, I was like, okay, maybe post trap a little sooner, like make that adjustment a little sooner. So,
and maybe it's not a post trap. Maybe it's just a reminder, which I'm sure they're doing in the huddle, where it's like, you know, you have Julian Reese going to work. I'm Marcus Damask on the ball side, or I'm Marcus Damask at the top of the key. And I have Harris Smith, who's, you know, not shooting it particularly well from three this year. Like, hey, let's go and play the game a little bit. You've heard me say basketball is a game of deception. Like, let's go and stunt. Let's make him second guess. Let's make him not as comfortable shooting these hook shots. Like, that type of stuff, I think, is, you know, in game situations, like going from staff to player, like, you hope that's kind of what's being said. And then you hope that the players are being able to, you know, digest it and go do it and execute it on the floor. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's certain things for every staff, but certainly for Brad, like, you know, late game situations, you want to go with what's been working, but being able to kind of assess and say, hey, what do we need here? It stops, you know, maybe we get our best defensive lineup in there.
Last one, Boot says, do you think we'll see Dane and Coleman playing together on a more consistent basis? What do you think, Mike?
I mean, it depends on what your definition of consistent basis is. I don't
consistent. No, that I can tell you that now. No, that is.
I just don't think so. I think it's going to be, you know, you're going to have Dane coming in to spell Coleman at the five on some occasions. I could see them going to Ty at the five defensively at times. If Coleman's out of the game, that wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, maybe it's Quincy at the five. You know, and then Dane, of course, like in foul trouble situations. Like I will say with Dane, it was really started with the Ohio State game. He seems to be, when he gets in there, like, hey man, I'm gonna lock in defensively.
Yes.
And I'm just gonna be active, and whatever else happens, happens. And that's like been the best thing, I think, for Dane, because I think it settles him in a little bit more. He's made some free throws as well, which has been great. But I don't see that being a particular adjustment where it's like, ah, we got to play these two guys together. But maybe, right? Maybe you say, well, we got Julian Reese. Like maybe that's more Dane Danger minutes to potentially, unfortunately, like absorb fouls. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you put Coleman Hawkins on more of like a Dante Scott. And then the rest of the guys get, you know, slide down to guarding some of those other guys. So is it likely? Probably not, but possible, I think, given the matchups.
Yeah, just to wrap up, Mike, my kind of take on this, I wrote about it today, is I'm not selling stock on this team, but there are, like, this is a really good basketball team, and I still think it has really good potential, especially if you get Terrence back to being full, you know, pre-suspension Terrence. And I think we're starting to see flashes of that a little bit. But there are concerns here, like some trends, especially defensively, late game stuff, that if they want to be a great team and if they want to go as far as they think they can go, they got to clean it up and they got a month to do it.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not going to guard at a high level, like that is going to be, you're going to kind of sign your own death certificate in March. I mean, that's just how that works. There's so much shooting variance and shots made, shots missed, that you don't want to play that game when you get into a single elimination tournament. You know, so I think that's where it starts. But, you know, I think I've talked about this before. When you look at the profile of this team, okay, size, check, right? Offensive ability, check. Defensive ability, check. Character. Like, I think this is a good character team. I think, like, they check a lot of those boxes. But just because you have those boxes doesn't mean it's automatic, it's autopilot every single game. So if this team can dial in and say, man, here's who we are, let's get back to our identity. Let's be just relentless defensively, forcing tough twos, clearing the glass. Because if you do that, you can get out in transition. And then, hey, let's use our size. Let's use our offensive ability. Let's move. Let's cut. Let's shoot with confidence. Let's get into the right type of actions that whatever the matchup calls for. Let's do all that. If they can do those things, they can absolutely. I mean, look around the country this year. Like, to me, right now, I'll say, like, there are two teams that I think right this second, like, there are only two teams I can envision winning it all right now. It's UConn and Purdue. Like, those are the two teams. Everybody else, given the floors that they've shown, can't make the second weekend. Is susceptible to not making the second weekend. I truly believe that.
It's a great point, Mike, to remind Illini fans, every other fan base is going through the doubts and then the highs and the lows of all. I mean, North Carolina fans are going through it right now. Marquette fans go through, like, all these other teams that are in this.
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yes, perfect example. All these teams are having these doubts, then these highs, and then the loss. Like, how did that happen? Like, what's happening? Why aren't we're not going to be that Sweet 16 team. Well, there's going to be 16 of them, and I only feel comfortable with two of them right now.
Yeah. No, truly. I mean, I feel like I've watched a lot of college basketball. I've watched a lot of these teams, and, you know, it's
Tennessee
hard.
Might be my next one. Like, I feel good about that team, but
yeah, like, look, I think, you know, we get kind of pulled into this Illinois orbit.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, if we're not watching Illinois games, we're watching Big Ten games. And if it's not a Big Ten game, it's an Illinois game. And when you watch college basketball, it's just, there is, and this is kind of my theory on this, is the transfer portal and what it's done the last few years. Because when you go back, there's some college basketball accounts that will post, like, here's the AP poll from 2018, week 14. And you'll see Villanova and you'll see Kansas and see all these teams, and they're 21-1, 21-2, 20-2, 22-2. Like, And right now, I think in the top 25, there's two loss teams.
Yeah.
And it's UConn and Purdue. The rest of the teams are, I think, at least three losses or more. So my theory is that the transfer portal has raised the ceiling for teams.
It's all five losses or more, to be like, I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
Like UConn, Purdue, Houston has three. Everyone else, like in the top 20 of the KenPom, has five losses.
Yeah. So like, I think what you've seen is because you can get a quick influx of talent via the portal, right? Like teams can reload quicker. And that, I think, continues to give you a ceiling, right? Like you still have a ceiling. But the fact that there's these overhauls of rosters and continuity isn't fully developed, floors are lower. Mm-hmm. Floors are lower now than they have been in, like, probably ever in college basketball. So you don't want to be one of those teams that is playing catch up all year to try to get continuity, and it's too late in March. Try to find it, capture it, because if you capture it, you're going to face a hell of a lot of teams in March that have not. I can guarantee that. So that's why this month of February and ascending to that point is so important. Because, man, if there's a year to do it, it's this year for sure.
Yeah, and just perfect example. I say Tennessee. They just lost by 16 on the road at Texas A&M. So there you go. Just kind of a perfect example of it. Michael Tulip, you are the goods. Thanks for coming out with us. We appreciate it as always, man.
Appreciate you, man.
Thanks for everybody on the live YouTube channel. Hit the like button, subscribe to us, hit the notifications bell as well. Thanks to everybody on the podcast for listening there. Rate us, review us, and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. We'll talk to you next time on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.